Hi, I'm John Weber, sitting in for Marian McPartland. And my guest today on Piano Jazz is vocalist, lyricist, consummate improviser, devoted mom, and teacher extraordinaire, Sheila Jordan.
Oh my goodness, what a buildup. I hope I can live up to it.
Welcome to Piano Jazz.
Thank you, it's wonderful to be here.
I must tell you first just how much respect and admiration I have for all the chances that you've taken in your career. Every stage of your career, you continue to take them. And you have been on the ground floor of more big risk moments in the history of jazz than anybody I can think of. And even as a teenager, you were listening to things that maybe your peers weren't listening to. Your fellow teenagers were probably listening to Glenn Miller and maybe even some of the great jazz bands like Ellington and Basie and Woody Herman and Stan Kenton. What were you listening to as a teenager in the 40s?
I was listening to Byrd when I was a teenager because I've been singing since I've been about 3 years old. It was just an outlet for me as a little kid, and I never knew what kind of music I wanted to sing until I took a break from high school, during my lunch hour, I should say, and I went downstairs, and, you know, I was always playing music on the jukebox there, and I saw this this record. It said Charlie Parker and his Reboppers, and I said, oh, that sounds interesting, you know. I'll put my nickel in, and it was Byrd, and that was it. I mean, my whole body was shaking. I'll never forget it. I was just, you know, totally in shock over this music. And I said, oh, my God, I got a message. That's the kind of music I'll dedicate my life to, whether I sing it, whether I support it, or whether I teach it one day. That's the kind of music I want to dedicate my life to, and I've done that.
Well, you are extremely supportive of other musicians. Here you were going out to hear bebop, which in those days, I'm sure that was about a million light years off the radar screen from mainstream jazz, even.
Yes,
that was a brand new thing. So you were just exploring this. But you had a trio called, I think it was Skeeter, Mitch, and Jean. Jean is Jeanette's your middle name. And you were writing lyrics for memorizing Byrd's solos, first of all, which was amazing enough. And then writing lyrics to Confirmation and other songs.
Well, the guys wrote most of the lyrics. I wasn't really into lyric writing, but I would help them in certain areas. I say, I don't think this fits, you know. But, we did do lyrics to Byrd solos. Skeeter and Mitch did a lot of lyrics, and they were the ones who helped me. They were the ones who taught me basically how to improvise, scat sing, you know. And, of course, listening to Byrd's music and trying to learn his solos was a big help. And having this tremendous love and addiction for bebop music, I found out that it all started with the blues. But I didn't know that at the time, you know. But through years of learning and checking out things, I got into the blues. I always liked the blues, but I never thought I could sing the blues, you know. So that's really what happened.
But you always sound very, very soulful on every recording I've ever heard of yours. And I would love to hear you do a blues if you, like humdrum blues?
Yes, I'd like to do humdrum blues, the Oscar Brown Jr. And I have a wonderful pianist with me, dear friend and fantastic musician.
Yes, it is our blessed
Do
good
you know
fortune.
Him?
Steve Kuhn, oh my
yeah,
God, he's
Steve
wonderful.
Kuhn.
It's amazing, brilliant man. There's so much musicality in this room. I'm humbled.
Well, so, we've worked together for a long time, so we'll do humdrum blues.
Beautiful.
Everybody gets the blues. I've had the blues most of my life. Haven't I, Steve Kuhn? Sometimes they're sad, sometimes they're glad, sometimes they're bad, sometimes they're mad, but I sure can get the blues. Life can be mighty monotonous. We're always battling boredom.
Where, tell me, where has it gotten us? Everything's still so doggone humdrum stuff.
Oscar Brown Jr., lyrics and music?
Yes.
Chicago Man.
Oh, he's a real poet. I always thought he was a real poet. You know, that Sin and Soul album, that was a killer. I didn't really know Oscar that well. I met him in his later years, and we were supposed to do a concert together, but then he got very ill and passed on, so I never got to sing with him.
Well, you managed to meet just about everybody in the business because you come out to support everybody in the business, notably Charlie Parker when you were a kid, a teenager, at some clubs out in Detroit. And what was it like? I mean, you probably were too young to get into the club, so I would imagine that you probably met him at the stage door or something.
We did, the back doors. But sometimes he'd do, like, things at the Greystone Ballroom where they didn't serve alcohol, and those were like concert kind of things. And he did quite a few of those, so I met him there. We used to get up and sit in with him. He'd see us, and he'd say, come on up and sing with me. And we'd do that, me and Skeeter and Mitch. It was our thing. I was in shock. But that was the first time he heard me. He said, oh, you have million-dollar ears, kid. And I said, I don't know what does that mean, you know? But Bird was it for me and still is to this day. He's my total inspiration. I am so grateful and thankful for having known him. He was like my big brother. And I got to know him quite well after I moved to New York City from Detroit. But the thing in Detroit at that time was there was a tremendous amount of racial prejudice. And it was very difficult, you know, to hang out with the people that you wanted to hang out with. So I went through some pretty heavy stuff in those days, being a teenager and wanting to be around this music and not thinking in terms of color and not having prejudice, you know. So it was rough.
Yeah. Well, you always followed your heart and you followed your,
yes,
your heart's desire and your wishes and, you know, and Bird, as far as I understand, you told me that his appreciation for you was always strictly professional.
Absolutely.
In other words, he was your big brother. He approached you respectfully as a fellow artist.
I wasn't his type.
Well, I don't know. I mean, well, one of his rhythm section definitely took a fancy to you.
Who?
Piano player.
Oh, my God. I forgot all about him. I married him, for God's sake.
The father of Tracy, your beautiful daughter.
Yes.
Yeah, Duke Jordan. Tell me about you. Tell me about Duke Jordan. Do you meet him in Detroit or out in New
York? I met him in Detroit when he was with Bird, yes.
Yeah. You met everybody. You came to everybody's gigs. Charles Mingus and Max Roach. Is that about 1948 or so? What year did you move to New York?
About 49, I think.
49.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they obviously recognized your prodigious talent and ability and your potential. When did they recommend Lenny Tristano as your theory coach?
Max, I saw Max, you know, a lot of times, and he recommended Lenny. I said, I'm looking for a teacher. And he said, well, why don't you go up to Lenny Tristano? He's teaching now, so that's what happened. I went to Lenny.
Describe a Lenny Tristano piano lesson. What was that like, or a theory lesson? What would you do?
Oh, well, the first time I went to Lenny, he said, okay, this is what I want you to do. I want you to learn this Bird solo. So he put the record on, and I said, well, I know it. he said, you do? I said, yeah. He said, well, sing it. So I sang it to the best of my ability. And he said, yeah, you do know Bird, you know? And I said, yeah, well, sort of. He said, do you know a Lester Young solo? I said, oh, no, I don't know a Prez solo. So then he gave me a Prez solo. Yeah. I think it was Lester Leaps In.
Yeah.
So that was my first lesson. So it was singing with the instrumentalists, which I'd already been doing. He told me to listen to Billie Holiday, but not to sing like her, but to get inspired from her emotion, you know, which I always have been inspired by Billie and the way she approached tunes. I never realized how much she improvised until I got the original music and heard it. And I said, oh, my God, this woman is fantastic. Her improvising was, you thought that's the way the tune was written.
Oh, yeah. I love your song, The Lady. It was just you and bass. You and
Arnold Anderson.
Arnold Anderson.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
That's brave, getting up there with just voice and bass.
Oh, I started doing that all the way back in the 1950. The first time I ever performed a tune out in a club was I was in Toledo and Mingus asked me to sit in. And I said, yeah, but you don't have a piano. He said, yeah, but you don't seem to worry about that when you're up at Lenny's, because a lot of times I'd sit in with Peter Ind at Lenny's at the sessions they'd have after our lessons with Lenny.
Well, yeah. So at these Lenny sessions, these Lenny Tristano sessions, would he have a whole band playing or just
all of
just
his students.
Ah.
Yes. And then Max and Mingus would come up sometimes also.
Man, you were in the middle of it, weren't you?
Yeah, but I didn't realize it at the time.
Wow.
But that's where I learned a lot of standard tunes, studying with Lenny.
Like they'd get up and they'd do The Touch of Your Lips.
Yes.
And you'd hear it and you'd say, well, I bet I could sing that.
It took a few years.
Yeah?
I'll sing it now, though.
Oh, okay. Will you? Please.
With Steve Kuhn, yeah.
I would love to hear you do it.
Well, we're all yours, my dear.
When troubles get me and cares beset me and will not let me go, I turn to you for consolation. There I find new peace of mind to leave behind my woe. I turn to you as I shall.
Well, Sheila, in addition to getting the attention of Lenny Tristano and just hanging out with tons of great musicians, legendary musicians over at his place, you are an artist of great interest to other music theoreticians, such as George Russell, and who wrote, was it the Lydian chromatic concept of tonal organization, which sounds harder than it is. I mean, it became the launching pad for a lot of the harmonic conceptualization for great friends of yours like Miles Davis and Eric Dolphy, of course, and Bill Evans and and John Coltrane, many others. But this intellectual heavyweight in the music theory world, George Russell, wasn't known for using female jazz vocals in his research or in his composing. However, he found you somehow. Tell me about what happened when George Russell called you one day.
He got me my recording on Blue Note. He paid for a tape for me, and he took it to Alfred Lyons and Francis Wolfe, and they signed me for one recording. And I was the first woman leader, I think, except maybe there was Dorothy Ashby. But I was the first woman singer, and I was white, and it was fantastic. And George said, I would like you to do this with guitar. And Steve Swallow was on that date. He was still playing a upright bass. And
Barry Galbraith, I think.
Of course. Yeah. Barry Galbraith on guitar, who was wonderful.
Denzel Best.
And Denzel Best on drums. You know more than I do,
John. I love that album. That album. You know how you sound? You sound so loose and so spontaneous, rhythmically, melodically, everything. I can see why Alfred Lyons obviously loved what he heard in you. Portrait of Sheila.
Yeah, and a thing I recorded on that was Dat Dare. I did that for my daughter, who was always asking questions, and she was quite young at the time. So this was in 62, I believe. So again, Bobby Timmons' music and Oscar Brown Jr.'s lyrics. And I did the mother version. I changed it a little bit.
Will you do that for me?
Sure.
I would love to hear you do it.
All right. Thanks. I would love to. Hey, mama, what a dare, and what that over dare, and oh, mama, oh, hey, mama, can I go under there? Hey, what they saying there, and what they doing there, and mama, can I have that big elephant over there? Ooh, that in my chair, hey, what she doing there, and oh, mama, oh, hey, mama, can I go under there?
Hey, Mama, where's the square and where do we get air? And Mama, can I have that big elephant over there? My quizzical kid, she doesn't want anything yet. She's forever dumb.
You write some great lyrics, and I know that you certainly interpret other singers' lyrics. Like Abby Lincoln had a wonderful song about Bird, Bird Alone.
Yes.
The line about turning corners and tempting fate, which is the story of your life, as far as I can tell.
Incredible lyrics.
And do you still perform?
Absolutely. I'll do it now for you.
Will you do it now?
Yes.
I would love to hear you. I want to hear you sing Bird Alone.
I would love to do Bird Alone by Abby Lincoln.
Flying high, flying through a cloudless sky, sending soulful, mournful sounds, flying over troubled ground. Bird alone with no mate, turning corners, tempting.
To hear the full Piano Jazz broadcast, tune in next week to your NPR station. Log on to pianojazz.npr.org to find a station in your area. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV and Radio. Support for Piano Jazz comes from the National Endowment for the Arts, the Friends of Piano Jazz, and NPR.